Hey everyone, the It's All Journalism team wanted to remind you that we have an email newsletter where you can get all the latest news about our podcast. Go to our website, itsalljournalism.com, and follow the link to subscribe. Thanks, and enjoy the episode.
That's done with integrity to the highest standards with outside journalists and their reporting. What is the insight that can come out of it? What are the stories that we can tell together that we couldn't have done if we each worked on our own?
There are 2.3 million people incarcerated in the United States. That's a community whose voice goes largely unheard. But that's beginning to change as more prisoners are picking up journalism skills and learning to tell stories from their perspective. I'm Michael O'Connell. This is It's All Journalism. You may remember that we recently interviewed journalist Joshua Vaughn about What is Life, his podcast featuring interviews from prisoners facing life sentences. During the interview, Josh told us about the Prison Journalism Project, which he said would make a great interview for our show. So, today I'm joined by Shaheen Pasha and Yukari Kane, who are the co-founders and co-executive directors of the Prison Journalism Project. Shaheen and Yukari, welcome to It's All Journalism.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, first of all, tell me a little bit about yourselves, you know, your backgrounds, you know, what got you interested in journalism? Shaheen, why don't we start with you?
I mean, honestly, journalism has been something I've wanted to do since I was a little girl. It sounds very cliche, but, you know, I was one of those people that some people stand with a mic in front of the mirror and sing pop songs. I used to say stand with a mic or a hairbrush, pretending to be a mic and pretend to be a journalist. So it's something that I wanted to do my whole life, largely because I wanted to, you know, be a foreign correspondent. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to tell stories, especially stories from places and communities that people didn't often speak to.
So Yukari, tell me about your experience with journalism.
I was a child of the 80s, and that was around the time that there were a lot of tension between the US and Japan, which is where I come from. You know, Japan, I think, was in a very similar kind of place as China is a little bit. And I was growing up, you know, some in Japan, some in the US. My dad worked for a multinational Japanese company. And so I saw firsthand kind of the misunderstanding. I felt like the U.S. wasn't really getting Japan and vice versa. And I wanted to do something that told the stories of that weren't being told in an accurate way, bringing out true stories. And that was when I became interested in journalism. I went to school in D.C. At Georgetown, which let me be exposed firsthand to the foreign media. And so that's, I got my first internship at a Japanese newspaper and ended up working for U.S. News and World Report and then Reuters. I became a correspondent going to Tokyo, started working for the Journal and covering technology for most of my career. I started my career as a journalist around the time that, you know, Nokia had those candy bar phones and Motorola had the clamshell StarTex. So it was a time when people didn't really understand how important mobile phones were going to be. So that's how I got into technology. And I was at the Journal in San Francisco covering Apple, covering Steve Jobs. And I left to write a book about Apple called Haunted Empire. And the week that my book launched, I found out that I was in late stage kidney failure. And the big irony of that is that I broke the story of Steve Jobs getting a liver transplant. And, you know, I was writing about how he was too busy to, you know, really go see doctors. And I was doing the same thing. But anyway, I took a year off. And as I was recovering from my transplant, I got a call from a friend inviting me to teach at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. And that's how I got into teaching.
My next question was going to be sort of, you know, having you to describe the Prison Journalism Project. But before we do that, you know, how did you two meet? And then how did the, you know, you decide that you wanted to do the Prison Journalism Project?
It all ties together. So Shaheen, I'm going to let you tell that story.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I always tell people that like Yukari and I meeting was sort of like this divine event that was ordained because we worked in a lot of the same places. We've, you know, both been journalists for the same amount of time, and yet our paths never crossed until it became about prison journalism. And we actually met in 2018, at which point I was I was doing a night Nieman Visiting Fellowship to study prison journalism and how I could teach prison journalism around the country. And Yukari was an advisor at the San Quentin News. And, you know, everybody in my research was telling me you need to go meet the guys at San Quentin and you need to meet their advisor, Yukari. And that's what I did. I went out, flew out to California and met Yukari, sort of started, you know, researching what they were doing and kind of interviewing the guys. And, you know, it was instant synergy. It was just one of those moments where I was already teaching prison journalism on the East Coast. She was out on the West Coast. And the second we met, the Prison Journalism Project really, really came out of that, that meeting. We all often joke about the fact that the entire Prison Journalism Project came out of the ride back from San Quentin when she was taking me back to San Francisco. So, yeah.
So Yukari, tell me, you know, what was your position like at the prison? What were you doing?
Well, I was doing technology reporting, business reporting most of my career. I had never covered criminal justice. I had never really covered crime or anything like that. And I was working out of my office at the San Francisco Writers Grotto, which is a community there. And I got an email from a friend saying that San Quentin News was looking for an instructor to teach the Journalism Guild, which is kind of the classes that they hold for guys who want to write for the paper. And I just thought, you know, I'm just going to do something outside of my box. And so I had a little bit of flexibility in my time. And so I decided to do it. And it was just completely perspective changing. You know, until then, you know, I was against the death penalty. I knew that there were a lot of biases against, you know, Black and brown men in particular. I knew about the cycle of incarceration, but it really wasn't one of my issues. And the guys and their stories made me realize how, you know, how all the issues that we care about, you know, homelessness and drugs and mental health and public school education, urban poverty, all that stuff is really tied intricately to our state of incarceration. And it's just been completely eye-opening. I mean, I was teaching them intro to journalism. I was teaching them basic journalism tools. I built a curriculum for them and taught a semester-long class, but they really taught me so much more.
I think maybe what I should ask, Shaheen, is what got you interested in prison journalism? The fact that you went and got a fellowship for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a path I think that was built out of, I always say that it was built kind of out of pain and sadness. I mean, for me, I was a reporter. I was doing legal news. I was covering courts and cases, but, you know, it really wasn't something I thought much beyond, you know, what happened in the courtroom. And then it became very personal for me. And I actually became one of the millions of Americans in the United States who has a loved one behind bars. In my case, it was my best friend, someone I had grown up with, who's still one of my best friends. And he wound up being arrested and eventually convicted and sentenced to 150 years in prison in New Jersey. He was actually one of the last death penalty cases. And I think that moment, that surreal moment where all of a sudden I had to think about, okay, here's someone I love whose life is now behind bars. What does that even look like? What does that mean? I went to visit him in New Jersey shortly after he had been sentenced and he was now in New Jersey State Prison. And it was just this moment where I was looking at somebody who I knew it was super intelligent, had so much potential, had so much that he could offer the world, and he was languishing behind bars. There was nothing for him to do. I mean, all of this talent that he had, I just saw behind this plexiglass window. And one of the things he said to me there was that everyone here has a story. And that stuck with me. That always stuck with me. And even though at that time I was a young reporter, I couldn't do much about it. Those words kind of haunted me over the next few years, next decade, really. And I thought about them and what can be done about that. There are stories behind the walls. I know nothing about them and I would have known nothing about them if it wasn't for him. So eventually when I did wind up becoming a professor full-time and freelancing on the side, I actually had time and energy to be able to teach journalism and to go inside local prisons and ask people, you know, and ask the administrators, hey, let me teach a course here. Let me tell some of these stories. And at first they were very excited. They said, yes, absolutely. What do you want to teach? And I said, I want to teach journalism. And they instantly said, no, I mean, there was no hesitation in breath. There was no moment of thinking, because that's the traditional relationship that corrections has with journalists. It's a very sort of antagonistic view. So, you know, eventually I changed it around. I said, okay, I'll teach media writing, which is journalism, but in another word. And they were okay with that. And what they saw was that the guys that I was teaching in the Hampshire County Jail in Massachusetts, they loved it. And for the first time, the guys felt like their stories mattered, and they were able to understand how to tell the stories and what they were even witnessing on the news and the way those stories were told. So eventually I brought in a course at, when I was teaching at UMass, I brought in an immersive course that we brought in students from UMass journalism into the jail to work alongside these men to tell their stories. The guys came up with all of the ideas. My UMass students did the outside reporting. And the stuff they came up with was stuff that I'd never even heard of or thought of. And I'm thinking, of course I haven't heard of it. I don't live there. I'm there for very short periods of time. This is a whole world. This is community. This is community journalism that's just absolutely not being told. So that was really what propelled me to say, no, this should be done on a wider scale. I don't want it to just be one small jail in Massachusetts. I want this to be national. And that's why I applied to the fellowship, and I was very lucky I got it. And that's where I think literally that path was created for me. And, you know, the whole way my friend was kind of there just, you know, encouraging me and telling me, you know, this is great what you're doing, and I hope it's successful. And, you know, I'm very proud of that. And now that, you know, once I met Yukari and the Prison Journalism Project came out, I really felt like everything that I had been sort of working towards up until that point, all of these experiences were really leading up to Yukari and I doing this.
Well, by each of you describing your path through prison journalism, we get to the point now that you've launched the Prison Journalism Project. You know, could you sort of describe the mission of the project and, you know, how you execute it?
So our mission is to train writers who are incarcerated, as well as incarceration impacted. So formerly incarcerated, friends, family, as well as people who work there, and then help them find a larger audience through our own website, through our own publication, as well as through collaborations with mainstream media. And so the way we do it is we have two parts. One is our training half, and we call that PJPJ school. And so the core of it, as we envision it, is that it's a correspondence-based, handout-based program. And so we provide resources to train them to be journalists. And then the other half is our editorial work, where we have our publication. And so we use that as a training tool as well. And so we want to be putting out relevant stories, but we also want to provide an opportunity that's maybe a little bit of a lower bar than some other publications, so they can gain experience as they do this work. And then in addition, we work one-on-one with some of our writers to get op-eds, essays, and articles published elsewhere. And we also have started and want to do more work collaborating with other media organizations to get stories out. And so, you know, I think there's so much more attention now than ever on criminal justice as an important issue. And there's been really great work being done by other publications. I mean, the Marshall Project, certainly, as well as, you know, places like the New York Times, the Washington Post, ProPublica. But the stories today are largely from the outside, without, you know, outside journalists, of course. But we think that we know that there is reporting that can be done, stories that should be told from the inside that can only be accessed from the inside. And so where we really want to go with this is to see what happens when you combine that inside reporting that's done with integrity to the highest standards with outside journalists and their reporting. And what is the insight that can come out of it? What are the stories that we can tell together that we couldn't have done if we each worked on our own?
Was it difficult to come up with a curriculum? You know, how different is what you're teaching the prisoners different than what you would teach a college class or maybe even a high school class?
Yeah, I mean, we had both been independently doing this work and kind of basically making it up as we went along, just kind of using the core information, the five W's, the inverted pyramid, like the core journalistic tools that we had been given, and sort of adapting them to the individual prisons. One of the things that has to be made clear is that each individual prison, each individual jail has its own rules, and our men and women have to live within those rules. So while we provide this information, we teach them about interviewing, we also do keep in mind that there are some things that they may be restricted in doing. And, you know, we work with them individually to understand that we make sure that they do understand that we don't want them to do anything that would put them in any kind of jeopardy. You know, we are very, very much aware of the environment that they're in, but we've also been told by our men and women that they have agency and they feel like this is in some ways a way for them to get their voice out. And they are fully conscious of what the repercussions may be. And they're very careful within that. So in terms of it being much different, I think in some of the examples that I've used, there was some different, there's more reliance on source material, meaning, you know, information that's coming from outside, like other news outlets, and kind of using that for some of the basis of the stories that they can't get independent research on. You know, the prisoners, people inside, they don't have access to the internet. So a lot of what their information that they do have comes from stuff that can be outdated, or they get it from other news sources. So we are all about attribution and explaining how that works and incorporating that into their stories. And, you know, anything that they can get from our outside volunteers or for Yukari and myself that we can do for them. But the curriculums were very, for me at least, they were very similar to the curriculums I was teaching. I did teach intro to writing. I did teach opinion writing and editorial writing, all of those kinds of things, memoir and essay. So these were classes that I was teaching outside, and I would just modify them a bit to be able to teach the same material inside. And what we're finding is that it works.
So you mentioned a couple of times that the project is able to, because the reporters are embedded in that community and they're writing about that community, their perspective is very different than what, you know, other community reporters would, maybe the types of stories that they would write. So what types of stories have they been able to write, and what are some of the ones that you think have had some sort of great eye-opening impact?
Well, the story that we've just been working on over the last couple of weeks has been around the Derek Chauvin verdict. You know, when that verdict was announced, we sent in word to our writers, as many of them as we could reach over JPay, which is kind of the closed loop prison email system, and asked them to file dispatches about what people were saying inside. And, you know, we gave them a few simple basic guidelines about attribution, sourcing, making sure that they get permission from the people they're talking to, if they're going to use their names, and if they're not, being very clear about what kind of a person they are. And they just really delivered beyond our expectations. They got comments from correctional officers, from prison staff, and as well as, of course, the other incarcerated people around them. And they came pouring in from really all over the country. And we've put up a bunch of roundups. But that's, you know, that's a perspective that is really interesting. A piece that we just put up this morning was written as a letter, but it was written by a writer, and it was a letter addressed to Derek Chauvin about what he should expect on sentencing day. And it's very nuanced. That can only be written by somebody who's inside and who has experienced that.
And I just want to add there, I think it's also, we don't often think about the fact that there is a community behind bars. I mean, you have friendships, you have an economy when it comes to, you know, middle class and upper class, depending on whether you have a better paying job or less, you know, paying job, or whether you have support from the outside. So all of these things, these stories started coming in, but we started viewing this as a much bigger kind of community journalism project. We really have seen it as kind of, Yukari and I were both foreign correspondents at one point. And one of the things we always said is that we were foreign correspondents coming into different countries, and we had support and the expertise of people that were already local correspondents that knew the landscape and were writing and doing journalism. And we could use that expertise to help us. Whereas you have this community of 2.3 million people, which is the size of a small country, and there are no local correspondents. Everyone writing about them is a foreign correspondent that's going to be coming in with a very limited vision and very limited insight into what happens once they leave the prison. So I think that in and of itself shows us just the potential for how many stories are under the radar, and we're starting to see those trickle in.
So how many prisons do you have in the project?
So right now we have about 300 writers across 28 states, and then we had one writer in Canada. which is great. We've only been around for about a year, and we're just looking to continue to expand that. We'd like to be present in all the states, as well as we're, you know, thinking about the communities within the community as well, making sure that there's representation from women, which, you know, tend to be more shy, I think, about submitting stories, and the LGBTQ community, the veterans, seniors, you know, there's every group that exists out here exists inside. And that added layer of incarceration makes their experience different than what's out here. And we want to be getting those stories out as well.
How many people are involved on the outside with the project? How many other journalists do you have involved?
So we are an all-volunteer team right now. I can tell you about how we do it right now and then where we want to go. Right now, we work mostly with volunteers. And so the way the stories come in, I mentioned a little bit earlier about JPay, which is a closed loop messaging system. And so men and women who have access to that can submit their stories that way, and we can just copy paste. Most of our submissions come in with in the old-fashioned U.S. postal mail. We have a virtual mail service that takes them, they scan the letters, and then we have an army of transcribers who transcribe them into Google Docs or Word Docs, and then we have editors who will do a first layer of editing, and then we have a second layer of editors, most of whom are editors with experience in media organizations and journalism, and they do a second round of edits. And then Shaheen and I go in and we just do a third review as well. That's how we do it right now. There are some challenges like fact-checking, which, you know, we can talk about if you like, but, you know, right now, that's how we do it. As we get funding and as we're able to staff up, we hope to be able to hire work with fact checkers. And we've started a little bit of work with a news assistant who is doing some background research for some of our writers. So if, you know, we had a story two nights ago where San Quentin Prison opened up programming mostly for the first time since March 18 last year. And, you know, if you don't have an ability to get stories out other than the phone and U.S. postal mail, you know, we do it the old fashioned wire way. He called it in at 9 p.m. I took it down. And, you know, we had our reporter do a little bit of background research to add to it and got a story out. And, you know, I think ideally, we want to get to a point where we can staff up and we can provide the data research, we can provide the outside research that would add that layer of context that is hard to get from inside.
And I know you talked about the Derek Chauvin case and how you were able to get sort of roundups from that. Are there opportunities? Part of this discussion is just sort of the acknowledgement that you know, the way many reporters cover, you know, the criminal justice system is from the outside of prisons. I mean, are there opportunities for journalists to reach out to you and say, look, I'm working on this story. Is there a way I can get some of your reporters to gather information, ask some prisoners their perspective on this to add an element to my story?
Absolutely. We're starting to get those calls, which is great. And we're getting those calls, but we're also getting calls from editors who are saying, we have this package coming out. We would love insight, or we'd love to include a perspective from somebody inside. Is there anybody you can connect us with? And, you know, part of the work that we do is, you know, if you are a staff reporter somewhere, nobody does this work alone. You have editors that support you. You know, you have your bureau chief, you have other editors, you have section editors. And at the Wall Street Journal, we had very many editors. But there's a lot of work by many people that result in the story being as really good as it can be. And so at the Prison Journalism Project, we try to provide some of that support. If a magazine comes to us, for example, and they want a contribution, we'll work individually with the writer, almost like that bureau chief role, and we'll make sure that the draft is as good as it can be before we send it on. And then after that, we'll try to play a role that's as helpful as possible for the publication. You know, if they want us to step out completely, we'll do that. If they want us to help facilitate communications, we can do that as well.
How can journalists or newsrooms reach out to you, you know, to get this type of relationship, to establish this type of relationship, or maybe even, you know, journalists who may want to help you by volunteering?
We love volunteers. We love people reaching out to us. And, you know, we're always anxious to get, you know, contact with people. So one of the best ways to do that is just to directly send Yukari or myself an email. It's just our names. It's Yukari@prisonjournalismproject.org or Shaheen@prisonjournalismproject.org. They can also go on our website. We have a section there for volunteers to be able to sign up for, you know, inquiries if people want to submit. I mean, all of those things are readily available on our website. We're also on social media. So we're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
So what is your ultimate hope for the project?
I mean, I think one of our ultimate goals is we see ourselves as helping to create the first network, national network of prison correspondents. Our goal is to have our incarcerated journalists seen as journalists and not just sources, and for outside media to be relying on them as correspondents to be able to get that inside view. I think in addition to that, I mean, from an educational standpoint, I have a lot of goals to have eventually be able to provide credit to our men and women and to have this as a program that's readily available in prison education programs around the country. And I think ultimately, the ultimate goal, which I had from day one when I started doing this, was that if we get these stories out, then we can actually have people getting from the inside, getting their experiences and stories out so that people from the outside that have influence can actually use those stories and rely on them to have the correct information to make the proper changes to policy that need to be done. So I think it's a lot of goals, but I think we can get there.
You know, true criminal justice reform requires deeper conversations. And if, you know, we can look 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and incarcerated stories and incarcerated journalists are just more of a natural part of stories where they should have a perspective. If their perspectives are part of the broader discussions that are taking place, that's how the narrative shift happens. And, you know, there's a lot of work that's being done in policy, which is great, but ultimately, you know, policy changes when everybody supports it. And that's where we hope we can help our writers contribute.
Shaheen and Yukari, you know, I knew this was going to be a great conversation when I found out what the subject was about. This is a wonderful project. It's so good from so many different, you know, perspectives. It's helping people who are incarcerated sort of, you know, find a voice and maybe advocate for change. It, you know, it helps their family members seeing, you know, somebody that who's incarcerated making positive changes in his or her life, and then telling those stories to a larger community. I think this is a wonderful project. I think you're doing great work. Thank you both for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the people who make the news. You can find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. While you're visiting our website, why not sign up for the It's All Journalism newsletter? You'll get all the latest info about our podcast, including episode notes and news about live events and upcoming interviews. Go to itsalljournalism.com to subscribe. It takes a lot of people to create an episode of It's All Journalism. Nicole Grisco produced this episode. Amber Healy wrote our web content. Nick Dupre wrote our theme music. Emilia Brust helped with our booking. Nicholas Hunter provided a web assist. And I'm your host, Michael O'Connell. Thanks for listening.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.